So, when I was a freshman in high school, I had a crush on one of my best friends. And I kept it to myself for 2 whole years. I recall during our junior year, driving in his parents' minivan, like you do, when the crush was finally loosening its hold on me, my friend was flabbergasted when I offhandedly mentioned that I had liked him for our entire friendship thus far. He asked me, "How was I supposed to know if you never told me?" The thought just hadn't occurred to me. I was supposed to tell him? What held me back? I wasn't brave enough to disrupt things. I felt much more comfortable with the status quo of our friendship. I couldn't risk being that vulnerable and exposed. What if he said, "Ugh"? A couple years ago, I was sitting on the floor of the lobby in the mayor's wing of Boston City Hall. I was there following the lead of a group of young people who were calling Marty Walsh out because he was going back on his promises to fully fund youth jobs programs. It was a sit-in. We were singing and chanting and taking up space and generally being rowdy until Marty agreed to meet with the young organizers. Youth of color from Boston's working class neighborhoods led this protest. They know that these jobs can help their families out financially, build skills and resumes. Jobs like this are part of breaking cycles of intergenerational poverty and institutional racism that feed interpersonal youth violence. Once security arrived, I got nervous. I caught myself inching away from the center, as if I was unwilling to be identified as one of the protesters. I wanted to shrink to the side, maybe sit in one of the chairs along the wall, as if I was an orderly adult who just happened to be in the lobby at the same time as those protesters. I caught myself, I took a deep breath, and I recommitted to being there. I kept chanting. I moved back into the crowd. Why did I almost let myself back off of this very moderate, very mild form of civil disobedience? It's hard to be brave enough to disrupt things. It's easier to be comfortable with the status quo. For me, the status quo as a white middle-class adult is comfortable. It's hard to risk being vulnerable and exposed. So back to when I was a teenager. George W. Bush was elected president. Some of my classmates slept on the steps of the Supreme Court when they were reaching their decision about the vote recount. But I didn't even risk asking my parents if I could join them. I have some friends now who, as young people, were very politically active, protesting the Iraq War, participating in the anti-globalization movement, which included that powerful disruption of the 1999 World Trade Organization talks in Seattle. Y'all remember that? Unlike those friends of mine, and unlike the youth chanting in the lobby of the mayor's office, my teen risk-taking was pretty limited, and my political engagement was mostly nil, even though I was active in my Unitarian Universalist congregation. My status quo was comfortable, like I said. I don't think I yet understood how my own worth and dignity is wrapped up in the worth and dignity of everyone else. I thought the UU principle about the interdependent web was just about the environment. I didn't realize that it also includes the whole human family. So perhaps it's strange to have shared that story about a high school crush in a sermon that will shift to focusing on considerably higher stakes risks. But there is a connection there. The same reluctance to speak my personal truths to the people I care about for fear of disrupting things can also be a barrier to speaking truth to power. It's scary to disrupt things. February, as you know, is Black History Month. The legacy of Black Americans has included generations of powerful disrupting, resistance, organizing, freedom struggles, and more. This history and ongoing reality strengthens me to action, calls me to take risks, to defy and deny the hate that our current administration has been turning into policies, travel bans, walls, and more. In the Reverend Rosemary Bray McNatt's reading this morning, we heard about the discipleship of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. He was a Lutheran pastor in Germany in the early 20th century. He had a contemporary named Martin Niemöller. While Niemöller began as a nationalist who supported Hitler, he underwent a conversion and became part of the anti-Nazi German confessing church, as did Bonhoeffer. Niemöller and Bonhoeffer were both imprisoned in the concentration camps for their role in this movement. Unlike Bonhoeffer, Niemöller survived those years, and he later lamented not doing enough to resist the Nazis. And after that, he became a lifelong anti-war activist. He preached the words that have been altered and adapted to create this familiar refrain: "First, they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for the communists, and I did not speak out because I was not a communist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me." In his situation, it was dangerous to speak out against persecution of the Jews, the communists, and so many other groups targeted by the Nazis. What about in our time? What about the dangers of speaking out against the persecution of Muslims? What about the dangers of speaking out against the oppression of Black people, the devaluing of Black lives, against the demonization and deportation of immigrants? Is it risky to speak out against homophobia and transphobia, to insist upon reproductive justice, and refuse to be silent in the face of violence done to women's bodies? Isn't it worth the risk? It can be daunting to speak up, let alone to know how to do it, so that anyone will heed our words. Rosemary Bray McNatt challenges us to consider speaking out in such a way that goes beyond acts of mercy and witness, and that truly disrupts the forces of evil, to throw a wrench into the machine of hate. The political wilderness she addressed those 15 or so years ago is the same political wilderness we face today. The brambles alternately clear and thicken over the years. The beasts that stalk these forests are beaten back and then return, but we remain in the wilderness. McNatt writes, "We are unfit for this wilderness. We could have used some more time to get ready, more time to think of the perfect strategy and learn the right words to change the world. But like it or not, the wilderness is where we are." She calls upon us to recognize our situation, however difficult, and suggests that the love we hold dear may require a more practical expression. And she invokes Bonhoeffer and ventures that it may be time to pick up the heavier burden of discipleship. It's a brief mention, but Bonhoeffer's reference calls to mind the incredible risks that Jesus' disciples took, as did the early Christians persecuted by the Roman Empire. It's time for us to take some risks. And I have to admit, I am still afraid of taking risks. I absolutely still harbor that same reluctance to be vulnerable and exposed, that same instinct to hold back and not to make waves. So our worship theme this month is trust. And when you do a trust fall with someone, or when you do an activity like what I described the kids did, it asks us to trust that other person to catch us, or to trust our friends to keep us from hurting ourselves. I mean, it's a big risk. We might fall flat on our faces or on our backs. But once we take that risk and our friends catch us, we've taken a step towards trust. It is trust that allows us to take risks, and taking risks builds trust. For my part, I have learned to trust in our ability to take good care of each other, to take risks for each other. I have learned these things from community organizing. I have received an education in solidarity from people dependent on public transit fighting fare increases, from tenants fighting no-fault evictions, from youth of color subjected to stop and frisk searches demanding an end to racist policing, and especially from all the ways that these groups from seemingly different issues support one another and come together to fight. I've also been learning that there's a difference between safety and comfort. Safety is not a guarantee for anyone, but my access to the comforts of class and race privilege makes me disproportionately comfortable and safe from harm. So I can risk a little discomfort for the sake of justice. This time I've spent learning about organizing has dared me to believe that I am part of a community. Really, many intersecting communities, all of us are. I am called to believe that all of our destinies are shared, that none of us is free until all of us are free. Even after a decade supporting and participating in these struggles, and I'm sure many of you have been doing this kind of stuff for much longer than a decade, in my more cynical moments, I ask myself, what good can it do to go against the grain, especially when the grain is so ingrained in our political order? It can feel futile at best and frightening at worst. And even though it's against my religion to be cynical, just like Rosemary Bray McNatt said, it is very hard not to be cynical. But I am fortified by my belief in our shared destiny, our sacred interconnections. And I'm not here to claim that I am an awesome risk taker, far from it. Since that sit-in when I felt so shy about making waves, I have pushed myself to take bigger risks, including being arrested for a demonstration at South Bay Jail. But I was still worried. It still intimidates me to take a public stand or potentially endanger myself. I sometimes catch myself wondering, what will my father say if I end up in the paper? Who will judge me or reject me if I speak a controversial truth? Will I get harmed if I put my own self on the line for the cause of justice and peace? We may all be asking ourselves such questions. What if we are just too tired? What if we're literally too sick to march in the streets? How do we take risks when it's hard enough to just get through the day? Risk is relative. We are all of us needed to offer what gifts we have in the best way we can. We need to begin with that very recognition that all of us are needed. We all have something we can share, something we can risk giving of ourselves. It has been said that love is a verb, and that is what can help with the shift from sentimentality to powerful love, which Bray McNatt pointed out that Martin Luther King was concerned with. If we live love as a verb, we can make that shift. The minister at my intern congregation, Mark Harris, would always say that Unitarian Universalism is about deeds, not creeds. To me, this means we can best discern our faith through action, through engagement with the world. Mark once preached, "Your faith journey is a process of living into the truth, not a wordy definition of the truth." And I believe that is what we are striving to live into. We are striving to live into the beloved community that Martin Luther King so often preached about. Before I had my daughter, almost 2 years ago, I was unsure of whether I could risk becoming a mom. I could scarcely fathom that I would be responsible for introducing a new being into such turmoil as is this life. I knew there would be nothing I could do to fully protect this child from the world. But it's been well worth the risk. Parenthood so far has been heartbreaking in the sense that for me and Adam, her dad, this child has broken our hearts wide open. For me, parenthood has brought this truth into sharper relief, the truth that we are all in this together, that especially as we continue to face the wildernesses of vested interests that calculate war to be more profitable than peace, a warming planet, the shapeshifter white supremacy's voracious appetite for domination, especially as we face all this, we need to find ourselves in the inescapable network of mutuality that King would preach about. It is true, regardless of if we are parents, of course, we are all in this together, and we must risk connection with one another in order to face this wilderness. We can't do it alone. And our inherent interconnectedness calls us to take risks for each other. Parenthood in precarious times, all human connection in the face of cynical and inhumane drives to power require love. Defiant love, risky love, powerful love. We are facing the political wilderness, a retrenchment of wilderness. Let's take some risks for each other. Amen, and may it be so.